This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Chronic pain is a lot different than other medical conditions. You might not be able to spot it under a microscope or in an X-ray. But when you ask one of the 100 million Americans suffering from chronic pain, they will tell you it is real. A study at the University of North Carolina School of Medicine has revealed a new understanding of chronic pain, and it disrupts the idea that pain always stems from tissue injury, I should say. And just a warning, this segment is going to include a story that involves sexual violence. Samuel McLean is a professor of anesthesiology and emergency medicine at the University of North Carolina Chapel Hill School of Medicine and the director of the Triumph Research Program at UNC. Sam, welcome.
Good day. Thanks so much. Good to be here.
Give us a nationwide scope of chronic pain.
Well, chronic pain is one of the leading health problems in the U.S. It accounts for more people are affected by chronic pain than for heart disease, cancer, or diabetes combined.
I'm going to stop you here because I said 100 million. I trust our research explicitly.
Yeah.
Since I just said it, 100 million is a third of the American population.
That's right. We're talking about something that accounts for more than $600 billion in lost productivity and costs every year. And we're talking about something that's actually the leading cause of life years lost due to disability in the United States. So it's has a profound impact on the functions of people and on their ability to get through their daily lives.
Is it a medical term of art? If I say chronic pain, how do you distinguish that? How do you define chronic pain and distinguish it from other pain?
Chronic pain is pain that doesn't go away when it's supposed to. Chronic pain is pain that lasts typically more than 3 to 6 months, is where we would say. A lot of us get acute pain from time to time, and hopefully most of us are fortunate enough to have it go away. When it doesn't go away and it persists and becomes a problem, and it's not going away, it becomes chronic pain.
So tell us about your study to understand the skeletal pain, the muscular and skeletal pain after traumatic events.
Right. So unfortunately, I think most people, including most doctors, have a very incorrect sort of mental image or mental model of what causes pain. Most people, I think that, well, unless something's broken, unless you got a broken bone, a torn muscle, a slipped disc, that you're not going to have persistent pain, that there has to be some sort of damage really that you can see in order for someone to be in a lot of pain. Unfortunately, we now know that that's really not the case. Chronic pain is caused by changes in the brain and the spinal cord and the nerves that go through tissues such that you don't see, you can't tell from looking at someone how much pain they're in. And unfortunately, because you can't tell by looking at someone how much pain they're in, and because people kind of assume that you should be able to, patients with chronic pain face a lot of stigma. A patient who goes to the doctor for the first time with a chronic pain, let's say chronic back pain, faces maybe a very different reception or can unfortunately at times face a very different reception than someone coming in with diabetes or high blood pressure. That can be the assumption that it's a characterologic problem or that there's really looking for drugs or looking to misuse medications. So there's a lot of stigma that patients with chronic pain face in addition to all of the suffering and morbidity of the disease itself.
Horty Jacobs is one who has experienced just such stigmatization. She's a retired teacher and a photographer who has suffered from chronic pain for more than 6 decades. Horty, welcome to the program.
That's a long time. Thanks, Frank.
It is a long time. And when I met you in the green room, I looked you in the eye and I meant it. I said, how are you? But you look back at me like, do you really want the answer, Frank?
Right. Because normally I wouldn't say. I would say fine. But you look like you really wanted to know. And I told you, my level is a 10. And that's how they measure pain on the scale of 1 to 10.
And it's been at 10. For 6 decades?
Well, certain things aggravated it. An automobile accident in my 50s, I was rear-ended and pushed into two other cars, thought I was okay, and the next day I knew I had serious problems. But it was all over. It increased. It didn't go away.
Tell us how it started. You were at camp, right? 9 years
well,
old?
Well, I was 9 years old, and I found a letter that the camp had written to my parents saying I was complaining about having pains in my muscles. So they took me to a doctor, and he didn't find anything wrong, and he said I was fine. And that has always been my diagnosis. I'm fine.
What were you telling? So you're a 9-year-old girl. You come home from camp. You're telling people I've got this pain. Doctor says you don't. What do you do at that point?
I think I cried a lot. I remember lying in bed thinking I had polio because I was having trouble moving my legs. But at that time, they had invented the polio vaccine. I don't even know if it's a question of they're not listening to me. They didn't know what to do. I mean, there was just in everybody's eyes, I was absolutely fine.
So when you go to the doctor, what kind of responses, what kind of reactions have you gotten? Because they can't get the x-ray. They can't do the test that's going to show where it is, which doctors don't like, by the way.
Right.
So you're making them mad right away.
Well, my first and really nastiest experience was I had been on something for pain because I couldn't move my neck and my head. And they put me on a medication, and it was no longer effective, so I kept taking more of it, thinking if I take more, it'll help. And then I realized in my mind, that's not a good thing to do. So I went to a doctor, and he listened to my story, and he said, "You're crazy." He said, "You're never going to get well. You belong in an institution." And at that point, thankfully, a friend was with me, and I just got hysterical, and we left.
Well, Sam, let me ask you, Dr. Sam McClain, about this. I began the program, and you reinforced the idea that we know very little about this. That's in part because when we get to that threshold, when we can't explain it, we tell the patient they're crazy because I really don't want to fail on you, right?
That's right. I think to me it's an unfortunate byproduct of the success of 20th century medicine. We had so many new diagnoses, so many new wonder drugs coming out, polio, TB, antibiotics, that doctors somehow got it in their mind, I think, that if they couldn't figure it out and couldn't see it, it must not be there. And so we've come a long way, I think, with mental illness, and we're starting to come a lot farther with pain and chronic pain conditions, but there is still that stigma of you don't really have anything. I think as more research goes on and we're able to identify more and more, as we have been, the causes in the brain and spinal cord, that stigma is slowly becoming less, but it's still a major problem.
Well, and tell us what you've been learning, particularly a study that focused on the chronic pain that comes after sexual assault.
Yes. So one study that we did, I think that a lot of evidence suggests that when pain occurs after a traumatic event, it's not actually due to the muscles being stretched or, again, a bone being broken, but it may be a factor that's actually caused by the same biological responses that are part of the stress response can sometimes get messed up and cause chronic pain. And so we would often hear women who have been sexually assaulted in the past report that they have a lot of pain, and that's something that's common anecdotally. But there hadn't been any studies to actually look and enroll a group of women who are sexual assault survivors, enroll them in the immediate aftermath of the sexual assault, and try to follow them prospectively and listen to them and understand their stories. And so we conducted a prospective study here in North Carolina, and we enrolled women at the time they came in for emergency care within the first 24 hours after assault, and we interviewed them over time, and we found that more than half of women were in severe pain, that more than half of women had three or more body areas of pain, and that only 14% of them received any pain medication in the emergency department, because it's just not something we think of as pain happening after sexual assault. Further, we found that the pain often persists 3 months after sexual assault. More than half of women are still having pain symptoms, still having clinically significant new or worsening pain. And it's causing a major impact on their lives and a lot of morbidity. And I think that when we listen to the stories of these women, these very brave women who agreed to, after being through what they'd been through, also participate in our study to help us learn more about them, we really got a better sense of what might be causing these pain symptoms, and further evidence that it may be something to do not with the tissue injury. And I'd like to share with you one of the examples of the women in the story.
Please do.
One of the women's in the study. And this is a story of a woman who's from North Carolina, and she stopped by the side of the road to get gasoline one night at a gas station. She was approached by a man who was holding a gun. At gunpoint, he instructed her to drive to a dead-end street where she was raped. She repeatedly showed him her child's empty car seat in the back of the car and said to him, "You know, I've got a one-year-old. Here's the car seat. Please don't kill me. Please don't kill me." She stated that she offered no resistance. She denied any physical trauma. She wasn't punched or struck in any way. She had no evidence of trauma on examination in the emergency department. At the time of her initial evaluation and time of emergency care, she reported pain in her head and face with a maximal pain intensity of 6 on a 0-10 scale. A week later, she reported pain in 6 different body regions that was new, with a maximum pain intensity of 8 on a 0-10 scale. So we're talking about a woman who's now in severe pain in many regions of her body, wasn't before, happened after assault. This model of it's got to be a broken bone or there's got to be some tissue that's injured to be causing this is simply not correct. What's so sad is that a woman in 1970 who came to the emergency department would have gotten medications to prevent infection and medications to prevent pregnancy. In 2013, those are the only types of medications that I can still offer women, is medications to prevent pregnancy or infection. We don't have any medications to prevent pain, and that's simply because we understand the biology of pregnancy, we understand the biology of infection, but we don't understand the biology of pain. So we need more research to understand that so we can help these women, because it doesn't have to be the case that these women go on to deal with all of this suffering. We need better treatments.
But right now, is the only treatment analgesic? You give her medicine to release relieve the pain, which is not a bad thing, but it does seem that it's not getting at what this is.
That's right. I think that the medications we have right now are very imperfect, and I think that physicians will there's a lot of educational issues with physicians in terms of the amount of pain education that they get in medical school about how to treat pain, how to diagnose pain. And so the medications that we have available are often not used most effectively, but certainly we need new treatments and we need new medications.
Horty Jacobs, what do you think is going on with you? You've had time to think about it. You haven't gotten a good answer yet. What's your diagnosis?
Well, physically, they came up with a name for what I had, and it's called fibromyalgia, which is, I don't know how to describe it. I know.
You're not alone. And that's why they called it that.
Yeah, and somebody wrote a book, and we drove to Massachusetts to meet him. But I can describe the kind of pain that I have, which might be helpful, because it feels like, first of all, it's mostly now in the upper part of my body, from my back, bottom of my back up. And it's a searing, like I'm being ripped apart, and then like somebody is taking a knife and just making slices. Then there's the pricking, like 1,000 bees are attacking you, and this intense burning sensation. And basically that's with me 16 hours a day.
Has anything ever relieved it?
I have been on... Well, at one point I was on 14 drugs, so I don't remember much about Pennsylvania.
I'm guessing that some of those medications were to treat the side effects of some of those medications.
That's right.
Am I right about that?
That's what it was.
Yeah.
I was on 4 antidepressants. I kept saying I'm not depressed, I'm just in pain. 4 antidepressants, 4 different painkillers, and the rest was to take care of the side effects. Now I'm basically a nothing. So this is how I feel. And I've come to accept the fact that I need to find ways to live my life. And in spite of the pain, if I'm going to have it, I may as well be doing something constructive while I'm having it, because it doesn't go away if I do nothing.
You had a good experience recently helping your daughter, was it?
Moving.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. From 10 in the morning to 5, I was carrying boxes and shuffling things around and doing things I have not done in years. And I actually think one of the reasons was because I started a pain group with some women who go to a clinic, well, UNC. And we started this group, and we meet weekly. The interesting thing is we all have different things wrong with us, but basically it's the same pain. It's the nerves. It's the burning. It's the piercing. And to get into this group, our motto is you have to laugh. If you can't laugh, you can't join us. And pretty much, I mean, after we all had our first visit and talked about how we felt, that was the last time we talked about it. Because we're now with a group of people who know what the feeling is like. Because you don't, Frank, and you don't, Sam. And it's hard to imagine. But somebody who says, yeah, I feel that same way, they get it. And so you feel comfortable. And you come out of your townhouse. You get dressed for more than just having to go to a doctor 3 times a week. You've got a reason.
Well, let me ask Sam McLean about that. We've got a little bit of evidence that we're putting together here. There's something about the emotions. There's something about support and sociability and connecting with people We've had a description of the pain. What do you think is happening, and how would you go about researching? What are you looking for now that it's not tissue damage?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I want to say that when I was a kid, my heroes were baseball players and football players. And as an adult who's learned about pain and knows enough about it to know how heroic people are, my heroes are people, honestly, like Horty, who has tremendous pain, gets up, gets about her day, develops a support group with other people. I just have tremendous admiration for people with chronic pain. And I think it's very difficult to have a sense of how much suffering they're in. And it's just remarable. It's really amazing what so many patients, so many of your listeners, I'm sure as well, are suffering with chronic pain. I think that, we're starting to – the good thing is that we, I think, are more and more switching away from this, there's got to be something wrong. We just have to find the disc. We just have to find the – and that has really led us to say, okay, we don't know what it is, but also to look at new areas, to try new paths. And I think we're looking at the biology of the stress response and how all of our bodies respond to stress. And we modulate actively our bodies. We modulate pain actively all the time. We just don't notice it. But we're all familiar with that modulation of the story of the guy who's in the football game and doesn't know that he's got an injury till afterwards because the adrenaline's flowing. We know that's a kind of modulation of pain. We also know now that after stressful events, that pain is upregulated. So we're learning about how the body
meaning we feel it. We feel it more intensely.
Yes,
we might have
exactly.
gotten through the event
right.
without feeling it, and afterward. Man, are we aching.
Right, exactly.
Well, let me ask you this, because we're talking about individuals now, but I know you're about to do a study that takes a look at groups,
yes.
particularly African Americans,
yes.
under stress and the impact there. Tell
yes.
us about it.
Yeah. So there's been a lot of research that African Americans experience a greater burden of chronic pain compared to European Americans across a number of clinical conditions. They're also more likely to transition from acute to chronic pain. Why that is very poorly understood. We've done some initial work that's shown in the example of motor vehicle collision that African Americans are more likely to have acute pain and to do that and to transition from acute to persistent pain. Some of this increased vulnerability is certainly due to the greater socioeconomic disadvantage that African Americans face in their daily lives. However, there's a lot of data that's not the only explanation. One important factor that may contribute to this increased burden that we're researching is that discrimination, unfortunately, is a fundamental aspect of the social structure of our country and a daily reality for African Americans. And we're assessing whether or not that daily stress of discrimination and other forms of stress could be increasing the biology and changing the biology in a way that it tilts things more towards going down the path towards chronic pain. And of course, that's really important to understand because we have to be able to try to then figure out how do we prevent it.
I'm interested, too, when you talk about this modulation of pain, we do have filters. It's interesting that we can shut it out when we need to. Why is a mind, or what clue does it give you that the mind won't shut it off when there's no – if you get pain, the body's trying to tell you, I'm going to settle down this area. We're going to rest this area, okay, while it heals. When there's no tissue damage, there would be no need for that. Why can't the brain figure that out? And why doesn't it filter that pain and say, all right, enough of this. We don't have to feel it anymore.
It's a great question. I think that what we're learning is that a critical event in all of our body's designs was being able to survive stressful events. And to survive a stressful event, again, you want these biologic mechanisms that cause first dampening of pain and then great augmentation of pain. And we're learning that sometimes things go wrong in the body such that that augmentation of pain doesn't go away and it continues on. And so basically the house is rewired. I like to tell the medical students that I talk to that if you look at a house, you can't tell if the wiring is good or bad from the outside. It's the same with an individual. Something's going wrong, such the wiring's changing, and we need to understand that.
I want to thank both of you for being on the program today. Samuel McLean is a professor of anesthesiology and emergency medicine at the University of North Carolina Chapel Hill School of Medicine. He's also the director of the Triumph Research Program at UNC. Horty Jacobs is a retired teacher, a photographer. She has suffered from chronic pain for more than 60 years. Horty, thank you so much for being on the program.
You're very welcome. Frank.
Dr. McLean, thank you.
Thank you.
As well. Thank you for listening. There's more of the program coming up next, a children's book that got Buzz Aldrin buzzing. Stay tuned.